Slide 5. They all went through the gates, and then Anne clutched Julian in fright. She pointed silently behind them. The gates were closing again, but nobody was there to shut them. They closed silently and smoothly, all by themselves. There was something very weird about that.
"Who's shutting them?"
whispered Anne in a scared voice. "I think it must be done by machinery," whispered back Julian. "Probably work from the house. Let's go back and see if we can find any machinery that works them." They left their bicycles by the side of the drive and walked back to the gates. Julian looked for a handle or latch to open them, but there was none. He pulled at the gates. They did not budge. It was quite impossible to open them. They had been shut and locked by some kind of machinery, and nothing and nobody could open them but that special machinery.
"Blow,"
said Julian, and he sounded so angry that the others looked at him in surprise.
"Well, don't you see? We're locked in. We're as much prisoners here as Dick is, if he's here too. We can't get out through the gates, and if you take a look, you'll see a high wall running round the property from the gates, and I don't mind betting it goes the whole way round. We can't get out, even if we want to."
They went back thoughtfully to their bicycles.
"Better wheel them a little way into the trees and leave them," said Julian. "They hinder us too much now. We'll leave them and go snooping quietly round the house. Hope there are no dogs."
They left their bicycles well hidden among the trees at the side of the wide drive. The drive was not at all well kept. It was mossy, and weeds grew all over it. It was bare only where the wheels of cars had passed.
"Shall we walk up the drive, or keep to the side?"
asked George. "Keep to the side," said Julian. "We should easily be seen in the moonlight walking up the drive."
So they kept to the side, in the shadows of the trees. They followed the curves of the long drive until the house itself came into sight. It really was very big indeed. It was built in the shape of the letter E, with the middle stroke missing. There was a courtyard in front, overgrown with weeds. A low wall, about knee-high, ran round the courtyard. There was a light in a room on the top floor, and another one on the ground floor. Otherwise, from that side, the house was dark.
"Let's walk quietly round it," said Julian in a low voice.
"Goodness, what's that?"
It was a weird and terrible screech that made them all jump in alarm. Anne clutched Julian in fright. They stood and listened. Something came down silently and brushed George's hair. She almost screamed, but before she could, that terrible screech came again, and she put out her hand to quieten Timmy, who was amazed and scared.
"What is it, Jew?" whispered George. "Something touched me then. Before I could see what it was gone."
"Listen, it's all right," whispered back Julian. "It's only an owl, a screech owl."
"Good gracious, so it was,"
breathed back George in great relief.
"What an ass I was not to think of it. It's a barn owl, a screech owl, out hunting. Anne, were you scared?" "I should just think I was," said Anne, letting go her hold on Julian's arm.
"So was I," said Richard, whose teeth were still chattering with fear. "I nearly ran for my life. I would have, too, if I could have got my legs to work, but they were glued to the ground."
The owl screeched again, a little farther away, and another one answered it. A third one screeched, and the night was made really hideous with the unearthly calls.
"I'd rather have a brown owl any day calling, "Too-woo," said George. "That's a nice noise, but this screeching is frightful."
"No wonder it's called Owl's Hill," said Julian. "Perhaps it's always been a haunt of the screech owls."
The four children and Timmy began to walk quietly round the house, keeping to the shadows as much as they could. Everywhere was dark at the back, except two long windows. They were leaded windows, and curtains were pulled across them. Julian tried to see through the cracks. He found a place where two curtains didn't quite meet. He put his eye to the crack and looked in.
"It's the kitchen," he told the others. "An enormous place, lit with one big oil lamp. All the rest of the room is in shadow. There's a great fireplace at the end, with a few logs burning in it."
"Anyone there?"
asked George, trying to see through the crack too. Julian moved aside and let her take her turn.
"No one that I can see," he said.
George gave an exclamation as she looked, and Julian pushed her aside to look in again. He saw a man walking into the room, a funny, dwarf-like fellow, with a hunched back that seemed to force his head on one side. He had a very evil face. Behind him came a woman, thin, drab, and the picture of misery. The man flung himself into a chair and began to fill a pipe. The woman took a kettle off the fire and went to fill hot water bottles in a corner.
"She must be the cook," thought Julian. "What a misery she looks! I wonder what the man is. Man of all work, I suppose. What an evil face he's got."
The woman spoke timidly to the man in the chair. Julian, of course, could not hear a word from outside the window. The man answered her, roughly banging on the arm of the chair as he spoke. The woman seemed to be pleading with him about something. The man flew into a rage, picked up a poker, and threatened the woman with it. Julian watched in horror. Poor woman! No wonder she looked miserable, if that was the sort of thing that kept happening. However, the man did nothing with the poker, except brandish it in temper, and he soon replaced it and settled down in his chair again. The woman said no more at all, but went on filling the bottles. Julian wondered who they were for. He told the others what he had seen. They didn't like it at all. If the people in the kitchen behaved like that, whatever would those in the other part of the house be like? They left the kitchen windows and went on round the house. They came to a lower room lit inside, but there the curtains were tightly drawn and there was no crack to look through. They looked up to the one room high up that was lit. Surely Dick must be there. Perhaps he was locked up in the attic all by himself. How they wished they knew! Dared they throw up a stone? They wondered if they should try. There didn't seem to be any way at all of getting into the house. The front door was well and truly shut. There was a side door also tightly shut and locked, because they had tried it. Not a single window seemed to be open.
"I think I will throw up a stone," said Julian at last. "I feel sure Dick's up there, if he has been taken here. And you're certain you heard the men say, 'Owl's Dean'? Aren't you, Anne?"
"Quite certain," said Anne. "Do throw a stone, Julian. I'm getting so worried about poor Dick."
Julian felt about on the ground for a stone. He found one embedded in the moss that was everywhere. He balanced it in his hand. Then up went the stone, but fell just short of the window. Julian got another. Up it went, and hit the glass of the window with a sharp crack. Somebody came to the pane at once.
Was it Dick?
Everyone strained their eyes to see, but the window was too far up. Julian threw up another stone, and that hit the window too.
"I think it is Dick," said Anne. "Oh, dear. No, it isn't after all. Can't you see, Julian?"
But the person at the window, whoever he was, had now disappeared. The children felt a bit uncomfortable. Suppose it hadn't been Dick. Suppose it had been someone else who had now disappeared from the room to go and look for them.
"Let's get away from this part of the house," whispered Julian. "Get round to the other side."
They made their way round quietly, and Richard suddenly pulled at Julian's arm.
Look, he said, there's a window open. Can't we get in there?
Chapter 11 Trapped. Julian looked at the casement window. The moonlight shone on it. It certainly was a little ajar.
How did we miss that when we went round before? He wondered.
He hesitated a little. Should they try to get in or not? Wouldn't it be better to rap on the back door and get that miserable-looking woman to answer it and tell them what they wanted to know? On the other hand, there was that evil-looking hunchback there. Julian didn't like the look of him at all. No, on the whole, it might be better to creep in at the window, see if it was Dick upstairs, set him free, and then all escape through the same open window. Nobody would know. The bird would have flown, and everything would be all right. Julian went to the window. He put a leg up, and there he was, astride the window. He held out a hand to Anne.
Come on, I'll give you a hand, he said, and pulled her up beside him.
He lifted her down onto the floor inside. Then George came, and then Richard. George was just leaning out to encourage Timmy to jump in through the window too, when something happened. A powerful torchlight went on, and its beams shone right across the room into the dazzled eyes of the four children. They stood there, blinking in alarm. What was this? Then Anne heard the voice of one of the men who had captured Dick.
Well, 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 a crowd of young burglars.
The voice changed suddenly to anger.
How dare you break in here? I'll hand you over to the police.
From outside, Timmy growled fiercely. He jumped up at the window and almost succeeded in leaping through. The man grasped what was happening at once and went to the open window. He shut it with a bang. Now Timmy couldn't get in.
Let my dog in, said George angrily,
and stupidly tried to open the window again. The man brought his torch down sharply on her hand, and she cried out in pain.
That's what happens to boys who go against my wishes, said the man, whilst poor George nursed her bruised hand. Look here, began Julian fiercely. What do you think you're doing? We're not burglars, and what's more, we'd be very, very glad if you'd hand us over to the police. Oh, you would you? Said the man.
He went to the door of the room and yelled out in a tremendous voice,
Aggie! Aggie! Bring a lamp here at once!
There was an answering shout from the kitchen, and almost immediately the light of a lamp appeared shining down the passage outside. It grew brighter, and the miserable-looking woman came in with a big oil lamp. She stared in amazement at the little group of children. She seemed about to say something when the man gave her a rough push.
Get out and keep your mouth shut. Do you hear me?
The woman scuttled out like a frightened hen. The man looked round at the children in the light of the lamp. The room was very barely furnished and appeared to be a sitting room of some kind.
So, you don't mind being given up to the police, said the man. That's very interesting. You think they'd approve of you breaking into my house? I tell you, we didn't break in, said Julian, determined to get that clear at any rate. We came here because we had reason to believe that you've got my brother locked up somewhere in this house, and it's all a mistake. You've got the wrong boy.
Richard didn't like this at all. He was terribly afraid of being locked up in place of Dick. He kept behind the others as much as possible. The man looked hard at Julian. He seemed to be thinking.
We haven't a boy here at all, he said at last. I really don't know what you mean. You don't suggest that I go about the countryside picking boys up and making them prisoners, do you? I don't know what you do, said Julian. All I know is this. You captured Dick, my brother, this evening in Middlecombe Woods,
thinking he was Richard Kent. Well, he's not. He's my brother, Dick. And if you don't set him free at once, I'll tell the police what we know.
And, dear me, how do you know all this? Asked the man. Were you there when he was captured, as you call it?
One of us was, said Julian bluntly. In the tree overhead. That's how we know.
There was a silence. The man took out a cigarette and lighted it.
Well, you're quite mistaken, he said. We've no boy held prisoner here. The thing is ridiculous. Now, it's very, very late. Would you like to bed down here for the night and get off in the morning? I don't like to send a parcel of kids out into the middle of the night. There's no telephone here, or I'd ring your home.
Julian hesitated. He felt certain Dick was in the house. If he said he would stay for the night, he might be able to find out if Dick was really there or not. He could quite well see that the man didn't want them tearing off to the police. There was something at Owl's Dean that was secret and sinister.
We'll stay, he said at last. Our people are away. They won't worry.
He had forgotten about Richard for the moment. His people certainly would worry. Still, there was nothing to do about it. The first thing was to find Dick. Surely the men would be mad to hold him a prisoner once they were certain he wasn't the boy. Perhaps Rookie, the ruffian who knew Richard, hadn't yet arrived, hadn't seen Dick. That must be the reason that this man wanted them to stay the night. Of course, he'd wait till Rookie came, and when Rookie said, "No, he's not the boy we want," they'd let Dick go. They'd have to. The man called for Aggie again. She came at once.
These kids are lost, said the man to her. I've said I'll put them up for the night. Get one of the rooms ready. Just put down mattresses and blankets, that's all. Give them some food if they want it.
Aggie was evidently tremendously astonished. Julian guessed that she was not used to this man being kind to lost children. He shouted at her.
Well, don't stand dithering there. Get on with the job. Take these kids with you.
Aggie beckoned to the four children. George hung back.
What about my dog? She said. He's still outside whining. I can't go to bed without him.
You'll have to, said the man roughly. I won't have him in the house at any price, and that's flat.
He'll attack anyone he meets, said George.
He won't meet anyone out there, said the man. By the way, how did you get in through the gates?
A car came out just as we got there, and we slipped in before the gates closed, said Julian. How did the gates shut? By machinery?
Mind your own business,
said the man, and went down the passage in the opposite direction.
Pleasant, kindly fellow, said Julian to George.
Oh, a sweet nature, answered George.
The woman stared at them both in surprise. She didn't seem to realize that they meant the opposite to what they said. She led the way upstairs. She came to a big room with a carpet on the floor, a small bed in a corner, and one or two chairs. There was no other furniture.
I'll get some mattresses and put them down for you, she said.
I'll help you, offered Julian,
thinking it would be a good idea to see around a bit.
All right, said the woman. You others stay here.
She went off with Julian. They went to a cupboard, and the woman tugged at two big mattresses. Julian helped her. She seemed rather touched by his help.
Well, thank you, she said. They're pretty heavy.
Don't expect you have many children here to stay, do you? Asked Julian.
Well, it's funny that you should come just after...
The woman began. Then she stopped and bit her lip, looking anxiously up and down the passage.
Just after what? Asked Julian. Just after the other boy came, do you mean?
Shh,
said the woman, looking scared to death.
Whatever do you know about that? You shouldn't have said that. Mr. Purton will skin me alive if he knew you'd said that. He'd be sure I told you. Forget about it.
That's the boy who's locked up in one of the attics at the top of the house, isn't it?
Said Julian, helping her to carry one of the mattresses to the big bedroom. She dropped her end in the greatest alarm.
Now, do you want to get me into terrible trouble, and yourselves too? Do you want Mr. Purton to tell old Hunchy to whip you all? You don't know that man. He's wicked.
When's Rookie coming? Asked Julian, bent on astonishing the woman, hoping to scare her into one admission after another. This was too much for her altogether. She stood there, shaking at the knees, staring at Julian as if she couldn't believe her ears.
What do you know about Rookie? She whispered. Is he coming here? Oh, don't tell me he's coming here.
Why? Don't you like him? Asked Julian. He put a hand on her shoulder. Why are you so frightened and upset? What's the matter? Tell me. I might be able to help you.
Rookie's bad, said the woman. I thought he was in prison. Don't tell me he's out again. Don't tell me he's coming here.
She was so frightened that she wouldn't say a word more. She began to cry, and Julian hadn't the heart to press her with any more questions. In silence, he helped her to drag the mattresses into the other room.
I'll get you some food, said the poor woman, sniffing miserably. You'll find blankets in that cupboard over there if you want to lie down.
She disappeared. Julian told the others in whispers what he had been able to find out.
We'll see if we can find Dick as soon as things are quiet in the house, he said. This is a bad house. A house of secrets, of strange comings and goings. I shall slip out of our room and see what I can find out later on. I think that man, Mr. Purton is his name, is really waiting for Rookie to come and see if Dick is Richard or not. When he finds he isn't, I've no doubt he'll set him free, and us too.
What about me? Said Richard. Once he sees me, I'm done for. I'm the boy he wants. He hates my father, and he hates me too. He'll kidnap me, take me somewhere, and ask an enormous ransom for me, just to punish us.
Well, we must do something to prevent him seeing you, said Julian. But I don't see why he should see you. It's only Dick he'll want to see. He won't be interested in what he thinks are Dick's brothers and sisters. Oh, now, for goodness sake, don't start to howl again, or honestly, I'll give you up to Rookie myself. You really are a frightful little coward. Haven't you any courage at all?
All this has come about because of your silly lies and deceit, said George quite fiercely. It's all because of you that our trip is spoilt, that Dick's locked up, and poor Tim is outside without me.
Richard looked quite taken aback. He shrank into a corner and didn't say another word. He was very miserable. Nobody liked him. Nobody believed him. Nobody trusted him. Richard felt very, very small indeed. Chapter 12. Julian looks round. The woman brought them some food. It was only bread and butter and jam, with some hot coffee to drink. The four children were not really hungry, but they were very thirsty, and they drank the coffee eagerly. George opened the window and called softly down to Timmy.
Tim, here's something for you.
Timmy was down there all right, watching and waiting. He knew where George was. He had howled and whined for some time, but now he was quiet. George was quite determined to get him indoors if she could. She gave him all her bread and jam, dropping it down bit by bit, and listening to him wolfing it up. Anyway, old Timmy would know she was thinking of him. Listen, said Julian, coming in from the passage outside, where he had stood listening for a while. I think it would be a good idea if we put out this light and settled down on the mattresses. But I shall make up a lump on mine to look like me, so that if anyone comes, they'll think I'm there on the mattress, but I shan't be.
Where will you be, then? Asked Anne. Don't leave us.
I shall be hiding outside in that cupboard, said Julian. I've a sort of feeling that our pleasant host, Mr. Purton, will come along presently to lock us in, and I've no intention of being locked in. I think he'll flash a torch into the room, see that we're all four safely asleep on the mattresses, and then quietly lock the door. Well, I shall be able to unlock it when I come back from the cupboard outside, and we shan't be prisoners at all.
Oh, that really is a good idea, said Anne, cuddling herself up in a blanket. You'd better go and get into the cupboard now, Julian, before we're locked up for the night.
Julian blew out the lamp. He tiptoed to the door and opened it. He left it ajar. He went into the passage and fumbled his way to where he knew the cupboard should be. Ah, there it was. He pulled the handle and the door opened silently. He slipped inside and left the door open just a crack, so that he would be able to see if anyone came along the wide passage. He waited there about 20 minutes. The cupboard smelt musty, and it was very boring standing there doing absolutely nothing. Then, through the crack in the door, he suddenly noticed that a light was coming. Ah, somebody was about. He peered through the crack. He saw Mr. Purton coming quietly along the corridor with a little oil lamp held in his hand. He went to the door of the children's bedroom and pushed it a little. Julian watched him, hardly daring to breathe. Would he notice that the figure on one of the mattresses was only a lump made of a blanket rolled up and covered by another blanket? Julian fervently hoped that he wouldn't. All his plans would be spoilt if so. Mr. Purton held the lamp high in his hand and looked cautiously into the room. He saw four huddled-up shapes lying on the mattresses. Four children, he thought. They were obviously asleep. Softly, Mr. Purton closed the door and just as softly locked it. Julian watched anxiously to see if he pocketed the key or not. No, he hadn't. He had left it in the lock. Oh, good. The man went away again, treading softly. He did not go downstairs, but disappeared into a room some way down on the right. Julian heard the door shut with a click. Then he heard another click. The man evidently believed in locking himself in. Perhaps he didn't trust his other comrade, wherever he was, or Hunchy, or the woman. Julian waited a while, and then crept out of the cupboard. He stole up to Mr. Purton's room and looked through the keyhole to see if the room was in darkness or not. It was. Was Mr. Purton snoring? Not that Julian could hear. However, Julian was not going to wait till he heard Mr. Purton snore. He was going to find Dick, and he was pretty certain that the first place to look was in that attic upstairs. I bet Mr. Purton was up there with Dick and heard me throwing stones at a window, thought Julian. Then he slipped down and opened that window to trap us into getting in there, and we fell neatly into the trap. He must have been waiting inside the room for us. I don't like Mr. Purton, too full of bright ideas. He was halfway up the flight of stairs that led to the attics now, going very carefully and slowly, afraid of making the stairs creak loudly. They did creak, and at every creak, poor Julian stopped and listened to see if anyone had heard. There was a long passage at the top, turning at both ends into the side wings. Julian stood still and debated. Now, which way ought he to go? Where exactly was that lit window? It was somewhere along this long passage, he was certain. Well, he'd go along the doors and see if a light shone out through the keyhole or under the door anywhere. End of side 5.